discussions in the show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research, a registered broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisor representative, Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated. A registered investment advisor, Cambridge and ECM Group are not affiliated. Welcome to the ExitCoachRadio.com network and the Retirement Matters Radio Show, where you can hear cutting-edge ideas and strategies to help you plan ahead for your retirement years. Every week, we interview top advisors, authors, and business owners to help you plan with clarity and confidence. And now, here's your host, Buck Blanton.
Welcome, everyone, back to Retirement Matters Radio Show. We've got an opportunity to have some local talent on today. We wanted to introduce John Howard of Howard and Company CPAs. John, how are you today?
Good, and yourself, Buck?
Very good. We're happy to have you on the show. We've had the opportunity, maybe prior to our having the show today, to talk a little bit about probably the role that audits play with your clients, and one of the specific areas is in the 401k arena. When a company has a plan of a certain size, we have to have an audit done for the government. I wanted you to talk a little bit about that and a little bit when, and I've had some experience in working with you in this area. Everybody isn't equal here when a CPA does an audit on a 401k, and I think you would probably agree with that.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's correct. Typically in these retirement plans, when you exceed 120 participants, and that doesn't necessarily mean you've got 120 employees participating and contributing to a plan. It's over 120 that are able to participate, whether they actually do or not. Then that first year you exceed 120, you're subject to an audit. You're considered a large plan at that point under the Department of Labor and the IRS standards, and you need to submit an audit. A financial statement audit of the plan's assets and liabilities and income and expenses. Now, the problem that we're seeing is the next step is once you determine you need an audit, is what type of audit, because there are different audits with retirement plans. There's what we call a limited scope audit, which an auditor does not need to do as much work as with a full scope audit. And the difference with those would be if the plan assets are held by a financial institution such as a bank or an insurance company that can certify that the plan assets are the plan assets are what they are, the transactions have been posted properly to the participants' accounts, the allocation of earnings to the participants' accounts is accurate, then we can accept that under the Department of Labor standards. If you're with a brokerage house, they can't do that, and so typically that's a full scope audit where we actually have to go in and test participant allocations, participant contributions, make sure the contributions are being made and credited to the appropriate employee, and obviously that's a lot more work and a lot more intense. And those are just with single employer plans where there's one employer sponsor that sponsors the plan.
In that situation, John, how engaged do you find the plan sponsor to be when you're working on an audit like that, or when you work on this to see them and their general activities in the retirement plan?
You know, typically it's interesting to me because I'm typically dealing with closely held businesses, so there's one owner, a majority owner, and some other, you know, minority owners. And this is probably their biggest liquid asset is what they put away themselves in their retirement plan. And I find that we typically find them disengaged. Having the audit is a nuisance to them. It's a bother. They don't want to be bothered with it. They think, okay, I've got the plan assets with XYZ company, and that's it. I've done my fiduciary responsibility to my employees, to my participants. And we're trying to educate them as part of our audit process to say, you know, you're required to do more than that as a fiduciary. You need to be involved. You need to have meetings. You need to go over the performance of the plan with your investment advisors, whoever you have, you know, whoever represents the company that holds the assets. You got to have trustee meetings. You got to show that you went through a process of selecting the investment advisor, the asset mix, the investment options. You know, you can't just sit back and go, okay, I've handed it over to John Hancock, and that's it, I'm done. You've got to show some due diligence there as to why you chose Hancock, the investment options, and you got to document it in minutes to meetings. And we find that that has been lacking in almost every audit we do.
I understand that. We do some of those ourselves, not necessarily the audit, but we work with retirement plan sponsors. And, you know, most of the time when we walk in, we find that the entire process, procedure, compliance, governance situation has just been overlooked or it's just not present at all. Which brings me to another question, John. And very typically when we go out and see this, you know, it's a lot of a different process for a CPA firm like yours that's very familiar with different types of audits, especially the retirement plan audit. We see that a lot of mistakes are made on the when we're looking at the audit and the 5500 and some of the other issues with reporting the retirement plan. If a CPA firm does 1, 2, 3, 4 of these audits a year as opposed to yours, which does many, many audits?
As a CPA, we have our own auditing standards we have to follow under generally accepted auditing standards, but you also have, you know, your ERISA guidelines and standards that you have to follow in Department of Labor. And I have had one occasion recently where we were retained by a tax attorney because the Department of Labor picked up this plan to audit it because it wanted to terminate. And they asked to review the work papers from the auditor, not just the audit. They already had the audit report. They wanted to see the auditor's work papers. And because the audit report had deficiencies in it too, but then that's how they came back and asked for the audit work. The work papers were sent to the Department of Labor. They were not satisfied. They wanted to levy a large fine against the plan, and the plan custodian was the brother of the owner of the business. On top of it all, he was doing all the accounting and participant allocation work. And so we were asked to come in and basically follow through this particular gentleman's audit work for 2 succeeding years, and we had to redo the audit basically both times and, you know, walk through the audit program steps and submit, tell him the deficiencies in his audit report. We basically audited the auditor and got him to submit a report for both years that was satisfactory along with our work papers. I mean, we let them have our work papers again, and I believe there was about a $250,000 fine that they were talking about, and they waived it once they got, you know, satisfied with our audit work papers. So the fines that you're dealing with here for deficiencies in your audit work or in your 5500, it's a new revenue stream for the government, and that's the way they look at it. And so they're not afraid to levy significant fines on these retirement plans.
Well, we are talking with John Howard of Howard & Company CPAs. We're going to take a break just for a minute for a commercial, but when we come back, I want to talk with John a little bit further about some specific kind of issues and other things that he sees in retirement plan audits for the administration and management of those plans. We'll be right back.
ECM Group is the home of fiduciary coaching. Webster's Dictionary says a coach is one who instructs or trains. At ECM Group, we instruct and train 401k plan fiduciaries to understand their role and responsibilities in guiding their corporate retirement plan. If you are like most business owners or executives, you need to run your business or do your job full time, and 401k fiduciary compliance just isn't your day-to-day skill set. Let the prudent experts at ECM Group coach you through the 401k minefield of fiduciary compliance.
For information, contact Buck Blanton at 904-955-0853. That's 904-955-0853.
Well, thank you, listeners, for being here today. We're speaking with John Howard here in Jacksonville, Florida, of Howard & Company CPAs. And, John, I left it with kind of maybe drilling a little bit deeper into that whole process of the audit. That's an extreme situation, I would assume, where an auditor has done a plan audit, and in this case that you mentioned, for 2 years, and then a tax attorney has to come back and find someone to really do the audit. In that situation or in others, tell us some of the things that when you get this information, things that you see that could be improved, or maybe some precautions for some of our listeners.
Well, in a lot of plans, most of the audits, Buck, are limited scope in nature because most employer sponsors have the assets with a insurance company or a financial institution like John Hancock, Transamerica, Principal. So a limited scope audit can be done. But whether it's a limited or a full scope, a lot of times these custodians of these assets have what we call a internal control, I'll call it an internal, in layman's terms, an internal control report audit done, normally by one of the large international accounting firms. And we actually have to go through that internal audit report to make sure that, you know, if John Hancock says they're doing something in a certain fashion to allocate earnings to a participant's account, that, you know, the auditor of that internal control didn't find any problems. And so, but what we're finding with these audits is that very little attention is being paid to those report, to those audits by the employer sponsor, the trustees, which is typically the owner of the business. And they don't really look at how that could affect how the controls of the service organization can affect their plan. We just came across one audit where we found a couple of areas where the international auditor found some areas of issue with the service organization, the custodian, one of the major insurance companies. But we stepped back and had to look at it and say, does this affect anything with our particular audit? And we actually called the service organization and said, here's the company that we're doing. We have these issues we noticed your auditor found, and we walked it through with the service organization to make sure it didn't affect the audit of that plan, and it did not. Again, I refer back to meetings. There's not trustee meetings. We typically don't see them. They need to have the scheduled meetings, even if it's just with their financial advisor, and discuss the performance of the plan, you know, once or twice a year. And they got to keep minutes and maintain it.
Very, very standard fiduciary responsibilities.
Right. And, you know, another issue, too, is, again, too much reliance on the custodian of the plan. You know, I'm an employer sponsor. I got my plan with, you know, Principal Life Insurance Company, and I'm done. And that's sort of the attitude. And they want the custodian. They rely on the custodian to make sure that they're in compliance with laws and plan documents. And that's what they don't understand, is that's not the custodian's job. You know, as we're moving more to paperless transactions, such as automatically enrolling employees in plans, or employees are opting out of contributing or changing their contributions, and that's all being done electronic, you know, the custodian typically notifies the employer of the change. And so then we have to start to consider, Buck, what are the controls of the employer to make sure that they're getting that information from the custodian? Because nowadays, in the old days, you walked in as an employee, submitted a request, say, here, I want to withhold 5% of my pay. You handed it to, you know, HR or, you know, payroll, and they did it, and you noticed it on your next check. Nowadays, with, you know, everything being electronic and online, they can go through their account with John Hancock, say, I want to change it to 5%, and then John Hancock's letting the employers know about it, or the plan sponsor. And so we have to start to consider what controls to make sure that, you know, if an employee makes an election, say in October, they're getting it done as quick as possible, not getting it done, you know, in January. You know, the other thing we're seeing too is contributions being made late. They withhold the money from the employer's check, and each employee, they accumulate the funds. And the law says that it's as soon as the employer sponsor is able to segregate the funds. A lot of people think they have a 15-day window, and they think that's the law. But the law technically is, as soon as you're able to segregate the funds, you should remit them. And we're catching where businesses are typically, you know, within 3 days they're remitting funds, and then all of a sudden there's a couple payrolls that they didn't do it. It was 10 days a week, 15 days later. And those are technically prohibited transactions subject to excise tax. And we have found that, this particularly this past year, a couple of times. And so we've got some employer sponsors that have had to pay a little bit of an excise tax for late contributions.
And that actually has to be reported by the service provider on the 5500, doesn't it?
Yes, that's correct. With another form to remit the excise tax, there's another tax form, too, in addition to the 5500.
So it opens the door for, again, like you mentioned earlier, the DOL or the IRS to come in and go, why don't we look at some of the rest of your plan to make sure you're doing it right, too?
That's correct. Some other times, some things also we see is not enough bond insurance. Does the plan have sufficient insurance coverage for potential, you know, theft of the employees? And that though that's pretty standard. 10% of I think 10% of plan assets, or 500,000, whichever is greater, I believe. But you got to have proper bond insurance coverage, and sometimes that's not done either. So there's a lot to the administration for these employer sponsors to consider. It's not just handing it off to somebody and saying, okay, I've got a prototype plan with, you know, Transamerica and I'm done. We'll remit our contributions when employees have withholding and we'll be on our way. It's a lot more complex than that. And
absolutely.
There's a lot more to it. It's almost like running a small little business on your aside from the business these trustees are typically trying to run on their own.
Well, John, I jumped off right off the bat and talked about the retirement plan audits. Tell us a little bit more about Howard and Company CPAs and the other type of business that you do.
We're a full-service CPA firm. We, in Jacksonville, Florida, we provide auditing and accounting services to closely held businesses, nonprofits, retirement plans like we've talked about, tax compliance, tax planning to individuals, businesses, trusts, and another large segment of our business is business valuation and litigation services. I like to jokingly tell people we provide the services that much larger firms do at a more reasonable economic price.
Excellent. Can you give them our listeners a little bit more of your contact information if they want to reach out and get to you or your company?
Yes, it's Howard & Company. You can go to www.howard-cpa.com. Our phone number is 904-421-0690. And, of course, always via email, jhoward@howard-cpa.com. I've started this firm back in 2003 and have been going strong ever since I started after breaking up with a partner that I had at the time and went out on my own.
Absolutely, and still going and growing in capacity. We've recently done some work together, and my client was very happy with your work. So, people, please call John Howard because I can tell you these audits are not typical. You need to really take it seriously and make sure you find a prudent expert to handle that capacity of the part of the plan. Thank you again, John.
Thank you, Mike.
And we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
You've been listening to the Retirement Matters Show with Buck Blanton on the ExitCoachRadio.com network, where we upload new one-minute tips and 20-minute interviews every day from our expert host on a wide variety of topics. And if you're on the go, you can listen from your smartphone. Just type in ExitCoachRadio.com on your mobile browser. Come listen for a minute. For ExitCoachRadio.com, I'm Spike Reel saying so long for now. Discussions in the show should not be construed as specific recommendations or investment advice. Always consult with your investment professional before making important investment decisions. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research, a registered broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisor representative, Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor, Cambridge and ECM Group are not affiliated.